been awake. Tell me, how is everything? Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Welcome to Kick Art.
Kia ora, and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, sponsored throughout May thanks to our friends at Hewitt Mortgages. Kick Arts is New Zealand's comprehensive arts show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz, or check us out at kickarts.org.nz to find out what's happening in your area and how you can support us to stay on air. Well, tonight we chat books, art, illustrations and theatre. But to kick it off for New Zealand Music Month, here is Jam Henderson with Halfway to India.
It's been a strange old time. We've opened the production of Grease. It's gone really well, fantastic reviews from those that have hit it. But sadly, like many schools in Auckland, COVID's done another round, and it seems to be if you didn't get it in February, you're getting it now. So we have understudied the understudies of understudies, incredible kids who, with 1 hour's notice, have gone on and learnt things just to keep the show on the road. But this time it's hit us adults as well. So I'm beaming in from the safety of my home because I'm well and truly positive this week and missing the show. You know what it's like, Emma? You do all this work and then you're not there for the fun bit.
Yeah, and I'm really feeling for the kids that had worked so hard for so long as well. I know that you've got a few, you had a few kids able to return because their 7 days were kind of up, but still they didn't get to do the whole season.
No, no, it's been strange and it'll continue to be strange for the whole period that the show runs. But lovely thing, like a group of dads have rocked on up to the theatre and said, how can we help? So they're on the follow spots and, you know, anyone that's had COVID sort of rallied around and going, I'll do wardrobe because, you know, I'm immune at the moment. So it has brought in some beautiful people and that wonderful world of theatre, Emma, where everyone just rallies.
That's fantastic. And I saw that you had a couple of extraordinary students deliver you some yummy goodies to your door to keep you going as well.
Yeah, if anyone knows me well, you know I live in a very tall apartment, which is actually quite hard for any public to just easily get into without swipe cards and things. But somehow they convinced someone downstairs who kindly brought them all the way up to the 22nd floor to leave them on my doorstep. So yes, I have been drinking my beautiful Russian teas and remedies this afternoon. So fingers crossed tomorrow I feel better.
Well, other than that, this week, you know, there's things been happening all around the country. NYT had their show of Frozen on last weekend. We've had Dusty, of course, who we've been promoting over the last few weeks. They will have opened last night when this goes to air. So, yeah, it's great that things are happening, but again, it's that really big reminder that you need to have really strong contingencies in place so that your show can still go on when or if people in the show and in the cast, crew, band get sick.
Yeah, and it is those offstage things. You know, we often as directors have our cast and our understudies, but it's the bands and the crew that we don't tend to understudy. So, yeah, I did spot, was it Patti LuPone's shout out, or rather loud shout out this week in a performance overseas for audience that were taking masks off. And she well and truly lets rip. And I guess timely reminder, you know, we're all in this together and the one bit the audience can play is keep those masks on.
Well, definitely, because in speaking to a friend in New York this week, they are well and truly into another wave. So it's definitely a reminder that it's really easy to get complacent just because we're in orange and we're in a country where masks are recommended but not mandatory. Just that little bit of extra safety by leaving it on. I mean, I can't talk. I went to Bravi's dog fight last Friday and I have to say that the theatre was getting so hot and I had my mask on and I knew who I was sitting around, so I took my mask on, but every now and then I'd kind of go, oh, and put it back on again.
Yeah.
And obviously when I was outside and everything, a bit different. But yeah, it is hard to sit there in the heat with your mask on if you're having issues breathing. Mm. But still, it's for your own safety, isn't it?
100%. Well, I'd love to hear about dog fights, so let's catch up on that a little later in the show. Shall we kick off with our first interview?
Let's kick it off. Well, we are catching up with a regular guest. Well, regular in the sense that he's been on at least once a year for the last 2 years, if not more. So welcome back to Kick Arts, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Emma and Stephen. Thank you so much for having me back.
Good to see you.
So for our listeners that maybe haven't heard you in the past, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you get up to in the landscape of arts in Aotearoa.
Oh, wow. How long have you got? it's quite an eclectic mix, to be honest. My bread and butter is musical theatre, so I'm an ASDA-trained graduate, which sees me perform at times, not always. I also work as a director and as a choreographer, which is where my real passion for performance lies. But on the side of that, I also manage and perform in Les Femmes, which is a cabaret drag trio. And we do shows all around the country.
Awesome. So at the moment, you are busy with both directing and performing in Les Femmes. So yes. Which one do you want to start off with?
Let's start with Les Femmes because it's a really easy one to talk about. Earlier in the year, last time I was on the podcast with my partner Ollie, we were talking about our latest show, which was in at the Winter Garden in Auckland for Auckland Live as part of what was going to be Auckland Pride. Since then, we thought, let's do another one straight afterwards. So we made a brand new show, which is called Drop Dead Gorgeous, and it's a drag murder mystery. So anyone who's been to see our shows before, it's a little bit different. Normally we have a live seven-piece band performing with us. This one is much more of a... I would call it a play, but then it's like no play you've ever been to. So the premise is that the three Les Femmes queens, myself, Misdemeanor and Misgivings, are contestants in a beauty pageant, and the other contestant has been murdered before the show starts. So we're contestants, but also the three primary suspects in the murder of the Miss Conceit entrant. And we have a guest performer in every night who's never seen the show before, and they have no idea what the hell is going on. And they act as the detective to help the audience solve the murder. And they get all of they get handed page one of the script 5 minutes before we start the show. And then everything else they get handed live in front of the audience. So they have no idea what's going to happen from page to page. And then the audience also choose the outcome. So when we start the show at the top of the show, we have no idea who is actually the murderer. And we find that out throughout the course of the show, which is a crazy premise for a show, but it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Now, you did it. You've already taken that to the stage in Christchurch at Little Andromeda?
Yeah, we debuted it at Little Andromeda in March, and then, end of March. And then we just did it in New Plymouth last weekend before, at Fourth Wall Theatre as well.
So who have you had as your detectives? Who have your special guests been?
So in Christchurch, we had Rebecca Head from Tusk Puppets was in. She was a great fun time. Eilish Moran, who's a very, very experienced and well-renowned actor from the Court Theatre. So she was a lot of fun to play with. And we had an improviser and then a musician as well. And then in New Plymouth, we had the stars from Matilda, which is going to be on down there shortly. So we had Jess Old, who's playing Miss Honey, and then Justin, who's going to be playing Miss Trunchbull, as well as Sunita Torrance, who's huge with Taranaki, so lots of work with the LGBT community, and another musical theatre performer, Alicia May Hitchcock, who they were all so much fun to play with. Yeah,
Justin would have been a great time.
Yeah, that was Justin's show was the fastest show because he just zing 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 through it all. Yeah, I mean, the detective role is a very stressful one because they have literally no idea what's going on and they're performing in front of an audience. But that's where a lot of the fun of it comes from. And for us, it's really fun because we have no idea what the dynamic's going to be like. And then half of the jokes are kind of like off the cuff and in the moment kind of thing. And then the other half of what's scripted is often scripted but quite loose. And kind of the show flips between a pageant component. So we do like the swimsuit parade and the question and answer section. There's a talent portion. And then we flip between those components and like an interrogation scene with the detective. So it's kind of broken up. And we kind of get to flip in between. And each time we go back to interrogation, the detectives found out more information. And, it's lots of fun.
And as performers, how are you finding sort of this way of doing theatre compared to your usual more sort of cabaret style?
Oh, it's really hard to rehearse.
Yeah.
the very first time we performed it in Christchurch, we got off stage and we were like, oh, cool. That's what it looks like. Because the nature of it is that we hadn't been able to rehearse it properly with a fresh detective, because every time you have a rehearsal, you need someone brand new that's never done it before. So the first... We'd had a couple of run-throughs with some friends that had come in and helped us out, which was great. But then when we went to re-rehearse it for New Plymouth, we were like, oh, yeah, there's only a limited amount of stuff that we can actually rehearse as a unit, which is the complete opposite of how we normally run our shows, and we're rehearsing everything all the time. But we also have a couple of original songs in there, and apart from that, we don't sing so much, which is actually quite refreshing, because normally when there's three of us on stage the whole time singing with a seven-piece band, that's 90 minutes of a lot of singing, and that's a big job. But this show, it's a 75-minute show, and we're not all on stage the whole time, so we've got plenty of time for our costume changes, and so... we kind of get to relax and have a bit more fun with it, which is great.
Nice.
So where else are you going on tour? Where's left?
So next we're playing in Auckland at Q Theatre, which is the 10th and the 11th of June, and we're doing two shows a night, so a 7 p.m. and a 9 p.m. And then we're taking it to Palmerston North, which is in August, and then we go down to Wellington in September. And we're doing it at Bats Theatre down there. So there's a few stops left to go, and there's a couple more potentials that might get added in there as well. But it's a great thing to be touring at the moment. We built it specifically to be able to take it around smaller theatres, which meant that in the current climate, we've been able to keep touring it and keep creating things. And still be able to be sharing our silly brand of drag with the country, even though, there's been gathering limits and things like that. We kind of, most of the time, slip right up underneath those limits. So it's kind of fine to continue ahead, and we can still do it in a safe way as well.
Fantastic.
Now, polar opposite to all of this, you're busy directing one of my favourite musicals, Chess. Ready yes. for the Kiri Te Kārawa Theatre next month. How's that head switch going?
Yeah, I was teaching a class the other night, and I walked in and I said, we're doing Mamma Mia tonight for the routine. And they said, oh, is it because you're also doing Chess? And I was like, no, it's because it's literally the happiest thing I could think of. Because Chess is quite an intense show. There's quite a lot of really convoluted storylines and love triangles and political games and things. But we've just finished the end of week one of rehearsals. So it's quite a quick process for the cast. I think it's 6 weeks all up. So everyone else, apart from me, is suitably panicked right now, which is great. But we've just finished week one, and the cast are going great. It's sounding amazing. It's a semi-staged concert, so it's not what you would recognise as probably a full-scale production. We have the APO joining us for the concert series, which is amazing. So my definition of a semi-stage concert is a concert where you can see all the workings. So for me, if you're going to put something in concert, the music needs to be really, really, really good, which for Chess, it definitely is. So the orchestra is on stage the whole time. And then my job is to stage it enough that the story makes sense and that it's still a visually exciting experience for the audience without having to try and kind of hide all the bells and whistles, I think. So there's no moving set, but there's not a lot of costume changes. It's kind of stripping it back to what you need to be able to tell the story without losing anything, which is quite an exciting thing to do, because I think this is probably the biggest scale that this kind of a concert's been done on in Auckland for quite some time.
And still a challenge, because Chess is a complicated story. You know, I remember directing it a couple of years ago at Q with teenagers and having a few parents going, I absolutely love it. Don't know what the story was, but the music's great. And it's like, oh, damn. Yeah. It is complicated.
Even last Sunday when we had our first rehearsal together, we were fortunate enough to be on stage at the Kerry Te Kanawa Theatre for our first kind of meet and greet and sing through, which was exceptional. But everyone else in the team was saying, I love the show. I don't really know what it's about. And that's people, I mean, Benny Dodd is our musical director, and she's been playing on it. She played on the original UK tour. So she's done it several times and she still doesn't know what it's about. But that's kind of a great challenge for me, is to be like, how can we make sure that people leave the theatre, because they'll come knowing the music and they'll come knowing the show, or a lot of them will anyway. And how can I make sure they leave the theatre knowing more about what the story's about as well? Because the music is gorgeous, but then when you add all the intricacies of the story, it's even more meaningful and quite profound.
Definitely. And very close to home at the moment with so much happening in the world and in Russia at this time.
Yeah, I was a bit nervous about that, because obviously something of this scale, we programmed it middle of last year, which was before anything developed. And there was quite a few questions about, what are the parallels. But the show of chess is about a lot of things. So at the core, there's the competitive nature of chess. And then there's also those characters are not just their nationalities, but they are also loving, caring beings that are going through their own journeys. And so then the sort of political element on top of that is quite interesting. And now especially I'm trying to make sure that we're looking at it with an inquisitive lens rather than drawing parallels, because a lot of the sentiment that we're getting out of Russia at the moment from the public who aren't, you know, supporting what's happening at the moment is very similar to what the sentiment was at the time as well when chess is set, because it's set in the 80s, and we do reference some historical events in the show, but it's not a universal opinion either. Which is quite an interesting dynamic to play with.
Cool. So, of course, chess is on at the Kerry Te Kanawa Theatre from the 16th of June, and you can get tickets for that through Ticketmaster, or you can follow the story along and the journey at GNT Productions through social media. Uh-huh. And then Lay Femmes, they can find out more via your social medias again, which is Lay Femmes. And
Lay Femmes NZ, LESFEMMESNZ. Boom.
There you go. Boom. And, of course, they can find out more about Jeremy Hinman at his handle as well, and find out about your dance weekly dance classes when you're running and things like that.
Yep. I don't sit around doing nothing, that's for sure.
So if you are a music theatre fan and you want to upskill on your dancing, head along to the Empire for Jeremy's open classes.
Yeah, or you can find it on Facebook. There's a group called Theatre Jazz, which will come through to me. And we have lots of fun every Wednesday night doing some Broadway choreography.
Cool. Brilliant. Well, it's been great catching up with you again. It's always great to hear what's happening and know that our regulars are doing what they love and continuing their journey. So thanks so much for being able to chat with us.
Thanks for having me back. I look forward to chatting to you next year.
This next song's about being present. I know what you're thinking, kids. Presents. I like presents. That's not quite what I meant, though. It'll make more sense when you get a bit older. This song is Pants. It's 6 o'clock. It's time to rise. I wipe the sleep out of me eyes. Puts on me hat and then me coat. Upon her dresser is a letter Lucy wrote. Oh, Don't leave the house without your trousers. Don't leave the house without your shoes. Don't leave the house without your undies. Otherwise your bum is in the pews. At that point in time, I knew she'd love me. That was true. Because when he goes out without your trousers on, it's not a good thing to do. And as a children's entertainer, that would be the end of my career. So that is why Miss Lucy always whispers in my ear. Oh.
Don't leave the house without your trousers. Don't leave the house without your shoes. Don't leave the house without your undies. Otherwise your bum is in the news.
Now, I might be the captain, but I don't always get it right. But when you sleep without pyjamas on for at least 6 hours a night, well, you wake up kind of cloudy and your brain is groggy too. So that is why I'm sharing this important song with you. Now, love can be quite beautiful and love can be quite blind. But when you goes out without your trousers on, well, you're definitely going to find that life becomes more difficult and complex. That is true. So that is why I share this song with you.
You're right.
Now, at this point in time, everybody focus, because we're building this up together. We're joining in. Here we go on my command. Okay. Wait for it. Yeah, wait for it. Here it comes.
This is Pants from Captain Festus McBoyle, which is his fifth single released from his upcoming album, Look What the Cat Dragged In. Well, we are thrilled to have with us a fantastic illustrator who's been part of a new publication, which is coming out, perfect timing for Matariki coming up. So welcome to the show, Isabel. How are you?
Kia ora, not bad. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us on a Sunday evening. So, first of all, tell us a little bit about your journey and what brought you to being an illustrator of books.
I think illustration is something that I've always wanted to do. Yeah, pretty much as soon as I could pick up a pencil, I was always like, I'm going to be an artist. And my parents fully supported and endorsed that. So it was a pretty natural progression for me after I finished high school to go through art school. And then I went to Massey University and studied design, majoring in illustration. And from there, got into freelancing. So, yeah.
And what's your favorite, our listeners obviously can't see, but you're sitting in your studio. I can see some beautiful artwork on the walls. What would be your favorite medium?
I'm always experimenting with different things, but digital is something I always come back to. It's just easier. It's easier. There's no mess to clean up afterwards, which is a big plus. Yeah.
Because I was going to ask, looking at the beautiful work in behind you, you know, going from something like that down to a book, how do you as an artist sort of switch your headspace on that?
So, yeah, it's kind of, it's much the same. same sort of process. I will get like a script from the editor or the publisher, and I kind of just fit the artwork around that. Yeah.
So when the script comes to you, does it tell you what words go on which page, or you as the illustrator, do you have any say in where the pages turn as such?
Sometimes, like, I will lay out the composition, and if I have any ideas about that, I will put it forward. But usually the writer has a pretty good idea of how they want the rhythm to flow, so I work around that.
So tell us a little bit about this particular book and what it was like to work with someone like Witty, who is phenomenally, you know, famous when it comes to writing in New Zealand and internationally.
Yeah, so it was a bit surreal when I was asked. I was like, oh, yeah, I will take this job and I'll have a panic attack later, but yes. but yeah, I met Witty after agreeing to do the job, and he's very laid back, down to earth, so that put me at ease a lot with this project. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the book for our listeners. It's called The Astromancer, which is a very interesting kind of mashup of words, isn't it? Or, of course, the Te Reo version, Te Kukurangi.
Yeah, it's a book about a girl called Aria, and without giving away too many spoilers, she's sort of comes from a bit of a rough background. There's a lot of whakama and dealing with a lot of shyness, and she discovers her gift with the help of a mentor, Te Kōkorangi, who is the astromancer. And it's sort of about their relationship, and it's very sort of a coming-of-age story.
So is it based on a Matariki myth, or is it a totally made-up story?
Yeah, so there's several pūrākau in here, and some events that are based on true stories. So yeah, they're all part of the story. So it's fiction, but it's educational, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We always ask our reviewers who you think the book would be aimed at. So I want to ask the illustrator. Right. You know what. Who or what year level do you think this book is aimed towards?
So I would say it would be ideal for kids between the age of 10 and 14.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Great.
So because it has, I mean, obviously it's, you know, around Matariki, it's got all the Te Reo aspects to it and everything. How did that have an influence on your illustrations, or did it have an influence at all?
Do you mean like the illustration style?
Yeah, the style or the pictures themselves. Like, have you had to incorporate like Māori and cultural features within it?
Oh, yeah. So all my artwork that I do is based on Mātauranga Māori, especially Mātauranga Te Taiao. So I think that's what kind of got me into doing illustration and published works, because I'm very much into the educational side of it. So yeah, this one is more cosmic based. Yeah, so yeah, I'm always blending Māori design with my other influences. This book was sort of, I guess, more comic based, and it was aimed it at the age group. But yeah, I kind of just based the illustrations on what I wanted to see and what I was seeing when I was reading the manuscript.
And were you an avid book reader growing up?
Yeah, definitely. And mostly illustrated books and comics. Very much so. I collected them and spent a lot of time reading.
Looking at your past books, I'm very intrigued by your book, The Santa's Worst Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was my first published book.
That's cool. Dare I ask, why was it Santa's Worst Christmas?
Oh, it was his worst Christmas because everything was sort of falling apart. And, you know, when you have those days where it's just nothing is going right and sort of, so it was written and published by Huia Publishers, and they were envisaging how it would look like if just everything went wrong for Santa on Christmas Eve.
Nice. Now, I mean, being a young illustrator, if we've got young high school students listening into our show, what advice would you give somebody who wants to go down this as a career path?
Yeah, so I guess it sounds a bit cliche to say stay true to yourself, but yeah, I've kind of approached it in a very roundabout way. I'm on the autism spectrum, so I do have a very sort of specific way of doing things, and there's no right or wrong way. Just basically it's up to you to figure out how you work best. Yeah.
So how do you know when a piece of artwork is finished then? Because I know a few of my students find it really hard because they want it to be absolutely perfect, and perfection something that, you know. But how do you know when a piece of work is ready to actually be handed over?
A lot of the time it comes down to what the deadline is saying. So I don't really ever feel like a piece is finished, but if I'm being pushed to the wire, then I'm like, yes, okay, I just got to keep moving, yeah.
Yeah, the deadline is the key. I think quite a lot of us in the arts world find that. I mean, Emma and I are never happy with a show that we're working on. We could keep going for months, but eventually the deadline is an audience sitting in front of it, and it's a bit the same for you. It's got to go to print, yeah. And an audience has got to pick it up. Yeah. Well, this beautiful book is available from the 20th of May, The Astromancer. Make sure you grab it. And I'd say to all our teachers listening, this looks like a fabulous book to have in your school library, and it comes with teacher's notes. So make sure you're nabbing it for your library. Now, how can people find out more about you if there's someone listening that would like to follow your work?
So my website is izzyjoyart.com, izzyjoyart.com, and that's where my portfolio and everything, all my social medias and everything is on there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us tonight, and we look forward to hearing more of future illustrations and artwork. Now, as you know, we at Kick Arts love to play new Kiwi music, and especially this month since it's New Zealand Music Month here in Aotearoa. And we were thrilled to find in our inbox communication from Karikariroa, Hamilton-based singer-songwriter Natasha Kelly, and this is her single, which is currently available on Spotify, Easier.
It never gets easier. Your words were so wrapped around the survived in the you had. Why did it make me so sad? I thought I've been over it since 4 months ago. I thought I had known this voice is just too strong.
Now, we're absolutely delighted to welcome our next guest onto Kick Arts. It's someone we've talked about a lot in the past with other guests, but we haven't had you on personally. And that is the wonderful Fifi Colston. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Now, it's funny when Emma and I, you know, chatting about how we know you and your name. Of course, your name pops up in so many different places in the arts world. And given this whole show is about the arts, so we could talk to you for hours because you've been involved in writing and illustrating and publishing and costumes and props. You've taught, you've presented, you name it. You've done it in the arts world, and tonight we're specifically here to chat about your new book called Masha, but I think we might go a little off topic as well. Before we even launch into discussing Masha, can I be cheeky and ask, when did your arts journey begin? What was that sparking moment?
I don't know. For as long as I remember, I've always drawn. When I was old enough to write, I started rewriting the Chronicles of Narnia. I stopped when I got to trying to spell the word strange and fawn. A strange fawn. I couldn't spell either. So it was a short-lived writing career, age 7, I think, at that stage, which I revisited later, I have worked on Narnia as well, but that's another story. I've always loved making things. It's always been my solace and my, you know, my happy place to draw, glue things together, you know, and so I don't think there was any one time where I can go, I desperately want to be an artist, because I think I always was. But I did, when I was 6, I did say to my family that I wanted to be a nun, which was interesting because we're not Catholic, but I didn't see the sound of music. And I thought that looked like a tremendous amount of fun, apart from the escaping over the mountain.
Yeah. You just wanted to pick up the guitar and sing to children.
Dad, and I wanted to make all those costumes, all the dresses for the kids. It looked like great things to do. Yeah.
And of course, repurposing from curtains now is such a cool thing to do. Who would have thought that Sound of Music would have paved the way for a trend?
I know, exactly. I mean, upcycling your curtains into just, you know, into those little lederhosen kind of things. Yeah, that's great.
So where did this journey sort of brought you back now to writing books? And Masha is your latest children's book. Let's tell our listeners a little bit. What's this book all about?
This book is about... Freddie Foxworthy is 12 years old, and he's kind of the boy that, well, he's the boy that doesn't like doing sports, and probably a bit like my son, actually, although my son now is 31. But he doesn't fit into the usual mold, but he really loves arts and crafts, and he sets about making a paper mache puppet. And somehow the ashes of a bull terrier, dead bull terrier, who happened to eat his flour and water glue paste, the jury is still out, or was out, on whether Masha died because of that. And anyway, the ashes of this cremated bull terrier get into the mix, and Freddie ends up making this puppet with, you know, a very big mouth. So, so this is... This is actually the glove puppet he made, and there's a bit of a mystery about it. So it's a story about kind of imaginary friends finding your place, finding your talents, and there's a little bit of commerce in there, running a business, and solving a mystery.
How fantastic, though, because for so many children, the arts world is where they find their place in their tribe.
Yes, yes. It certainly was for me. And I do a lot of work with kids in schools. And for the last few years, I've been running a program called Draw Like an Artist. And a lot of the students are girls, but there are boys as well. And they're the ones that want to be on rugby camp for the holidays, and they just get into drawing and making stuff and just loving it. You get those kids who are so absorbed in the process and the making of the thing, and it's just an absolute joy. And I think you know, that was my youth as well. That was me. I found it difficult to make friends at school. I got bullied, all of those things. And being able to make something, you know, like you can make something and then suddenly people go, oh, hang on, that's cool. And so then you can hide behind the thing that you drew or made or wrote. And be a little bit cool yourself.
And you give your readers the wonderful opportunity at the end of your book to make the paper mache puppet with all the instructions needed. I absolutely love that. How do you juggle between the all these different things that you do to then somehow find the time to produce books?
Well, I think mostly my full-time job is an illustrator. It has been for a long time. I was an illustrator for the advertising and design industry for a long time, but I've always kept my hand in children's books. These days I just do illustration for children's books, for Nadia Lim, for her Marvelous Marvin series, and the Little Yellow Digger. I'm the Little Yellow Digger illustrator these days. And so I'm at my, I now work digitally, and so I'm at my Cintiq mostly working on illustration. I do costuming work when it comes along. I'm very involved in the world of wearable arts, have been for years. And my year kind of goes in waves of when I've got my contract work for a new book. But writing a novel is something that you have to try and find time for, because it's not something that is commissioned. By the time I'm doing some illustration work, the manuscript's been written and the publisher is saying, can you illustrate this? And so we've got a timeline. It's going to be published. We know when it's going to be out. With a novel, you're writing it and then hoping somebody will pick it up. And I was extremely fortunate to have some time to do this, because I was the children's book writer in residence in Otago in 2019. And I started writing a completely different project, that one I'm still working on. And Masha came like a bolt out of the blue for me. I've got my hand down here because I'm kind of waving it about. And I just wrote solidly for the last month of my residency on Masha, and he was the result of that.
Can I ask, how did you find going from illustrating, what would you call it, in real life, to illustrating digitally? Like, what was that process like? It must have been like learning a whole new thing.
Yes, it was, and I was a late adopter of Photoshop in a way. You know, I didn't even know how to use a computer when people were, you know, first using design programs. I had no idea. I found it very challenging, but I realised that I needed to upskill, and I'm very glad I did, because the last book that I did on hard copy and watercolour kind of work was The Little Yellow Digger Saves Christmas, and that was specifically because we wanted it to look like Alan Gilderdale style, who's the original illustrator for the book. But the next ones I've done digitally, I've got myself a really gorgeous, you know, a Cintiq, and I work straight on the screen, and I love it, because you know what? If you draw a hand wrong, you can Photoshop that out and paste it in really easily. So it's quite forgiving, and I really love it. And I now just keep my paints basically for portraiture work or for my sketchbook, and I find a lot of joy in that. But it was a learning curve, and I had to learn it. But there's some great tutorials online as well. Yeah, you just got to just dive in. And
yeah, they're definitely both Photoshop and InDesign are definitely programs that take, but once you get your head around them and you know all the tricks, they're really easy to use. But then, yeah, I love working in that way too, you know, but it did take me a bit to learn too.
Yeah, it does. And I think if you're not using it every day, it's easy to forget stuff. Then you have to reinvent the wheel each time, Yeah.
When you're working with children and in schools and things, like, how important is it, though, to still go back to the basics of creating with your hands and making mess? I mean, we live in a world now that we, you know, you go to an event and there's kids there on their iPads at the age of 3 sitting in their pram to be entertained or kept quiet. And I just worry, what are we losing? How important is it for our schools and our parents to keep those practical stuff alive, making the mess, getting the PVA glue stuck to your fingers?
I think the biggest because the kids will gravitate towards it happily. If you provide them with the glue and the paint, they're just like, yes. And they're in there and it's everywhere. The biggest education is to tell parents, to get the parents to stop worrying about the mess. I encounter quite a few parents who go, oh, no, we don't do that at home because it will make a mess. And you go, but being a kid is messy. How else do you learn any tactile skills?
Yeah.
So how babies put things in their mouths, and it's not because they want to eat it. They're actually working out texture, shape, size, the whole thing. It's a sensory thing. And those sensory things are really important, which is why, you know, making paper mache is great because it's squelchy and it's wonderful and you can create something and it might not turn out the way you thought, but then it might turn out even crazier than you thought, and you can just have fun with it. So I don't have any difficulty with getting kids off screens. In fact, when I'm running workshops, I have a bit of a nice chat at the beginning, not a chat, about you can use your phones because they all have phones. You can use your devices and phones at break time, but when you hit, we're going to get messy with charcoal now. So, and for some of them, that's the first time they've ever had anything really particularly messy on their fingers and rubbing it on paper, because it's about mark making. It's not about creating a really beautiful, perfect picture of something. So we do lots of messy techniques to layer and get excited about, and then figure out what they like working with the most, because each kid will gravitate towards something different. So, yeah. And also sewing. Sew a button on something.
Yeah.
Throw the garment away, So a lot of households are just, they're not geared up. They're not set up to do those things because, I'm from the generation that you had your aunties and your grannies showing you how, and your mum. But a lot of that's gone now.
Well, and of course we also, I had a grandmother and a mother who taught me how to sew, and I'm thankful for it because I'm a costumer as well. But I also did it at school as a subject.
Yes, I did. So I did it at a boys' school. We did sewing. Yeah, absolutely.
What did you do? Pillowcase.
Yeah. Yep. Pillowcases.
Sweatshirts. I learnt the bow. It was a really good maths lesson about how to make patterns looking at the geometry of it. So sweatshirts that were two squares, two rectangles, and how to sew it together to make a sweatshirt, and then a circle of ribbon, And that lesson for me, because I don't use patterns for most of my costumes, but I can look at a costume and go, well, there's a triangle, there's a, there's a diamond there, it's on the bias, And it's been fantastic maths-wise as well to be able to look at things and go, wow.
Well, that's the thing. With costuming, there's a huge amount of maths and science. What is going to react in a heat process? If you put a heat gun on something, and why does that happen? And, all of those things are valuable lessons in a whole wide variety of things, as you're saying, the maths, there's so much maths, and I was terrible at maths at school, so I had it in my head that I couldn't do maths. But I use it every day in working out, you know, making things, constructing things. So, you know, I have to. Although my son was this morning trying to give me a calculus lesson on the whiteboard. I've got a millennial living at home, and it was all about leaving the milk on the bench. He had graphs. He had, you know, anyway, apparently you shouldn't leave the milk on the bench.
Brilliant. What was one of your favourite wearable arts garments that you've made over the years? Is there one that just stands out for you?
Well, lots. I think, well, the one that is in the show this year, that stands out for me, but I can't tell you anything about that. Okay.
Top secret.
To kill you. Yeah, that's top secret. But I think the one that I always go back to is Lady Curiosity, which was inspired by Rachel King's novel Magpie Hall. And she's a Christchurch-based writer and it's a fantastic novel. And I was really fascinated by the whole story of tattooing and the possibility of you know, somebody being flayed. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? But it's, anyway, you have to read the book. It's quite a wonderful gothic sort of feel to it. And so I made this piece. I asked her if it was all right if I could reference her novel. That was all good. We're friends. But structurally it was quite difficult because there was building work I had to do in it with wood and mirrors and what have you. And I kept gluing things upside down. I had problems with things sticking to it. I had problems with the varnish, and it was an exhausting piece to do. Only because it really had to stretch me in a way I had not stretched before on a piece, probably from an engineering point of view. And but after all that, it sent off, it won third place in its category, and then it went on a tour around the world for 5 years in an international exhibition. So you know, it looked fantastic. So, and I kind of, you know, that sounds a little big-headed, doesn't it? But I kind of, when you can take a break from something, you've done something, and then some months later, because you don't see it again until you see it on stage, you submit it in June, and then that's the last you see of it, if it's in show. And then you see it on stage, and it's choreographed by a, it's taken over by a team of other artists. You've got your musicians, choreography, and your model, and that you've had no hand in. You don't know what they're going to do with it, and you just hope that it comes across. And then seeing it on stage is like, wow, it's like an entirely different other piece, you know, from the thing I had in my studio that had me on my knees, you know, crying because it didn't go right. Or So, but I mean, I've done, like, this year's piece is my 27th piece in show.
Wow.
Long time. And I've learned so much through that process. That's what got me into doing costuming and props. My whale portfolio got me into working at Weta Workshop and then on Stone Street Studios. So yeah, on The Hobbit, and yeah, so it's been good. It's you know, all the bits of the art that you do. Like I do my drawing and my writing and my making things. They all end up connecting, you know, in this wonderful kind of circular kind of way, and they become my life. It's my creative life, and people assume that. Over the years that I've had another job, like I don't know, do something completely different. I'm an accountant or something like that. And how do you fit all your creative work in? My creative work is my work and it is my business. So I had to make it work, which is possibly why I'm quite versatile because, you know, it's not a lot of money to be made out of books generally. And so, you know, I've got to keep the rent and the mortgage paid some other way. So,
brilliant.
And I love with Misha, like you said about the weaving together, the fact that your character wants to do arts and crafts, and then this whole story has come out of that puppet, has I think that's just beautiful. And what a way to weave your passions together.
Yes, I just, you know, it just came together. That novel came together so beautifully for me, and I had so much fun writing it. And I didn't even know how. I'm a bit of a planner, they say, are you a pantser or a plotter? You know, plot driven, or do you run by the seat of your pants? I had an idea and I just went with it. And there's a beautiful point in that most writers will be going, yeah, I know that. And in fact, all writers will be going, where you after all the kind of a lot of some preliminary stuff and you know, finally working on it, and you go, oh, my character's taken me somewhere over here. They've got a mind of their own. I've just got to go and follow them. And that's what happened with Masha, and it was just truly delightful. So, and it was great to be able to, I put a few illustrations in there too, because Penguin Random House said, well, you're a drawer, you know, you're an illustrator, why not? And then the paper mache recipe at the end too, because I would love kids to read this, have a laugh, and then go make puppets.
Yeah.
Get their hands messy. Just
absolutely. And we always give our books to our student reviewers, so they'll be getting that this week, and I'll be challenging our student reviewers to make the puppets. So we'll see what the end result comes out like.
That would be amazing. That would make my heart absolutely sing. It'd be brilliant. So cool.
Well, we wish you every success. It's been so fantastic to chat to you. As I said at the start, we could easily talk for hours, but our next guest might get annoyed. Fifi, thanks so much. We wish you all the best with Masha. It's available now where all good books are sold.
Hey, thank you.
And now we are absolutely delighted to welcome to Kick Arts Michael Hurst and Zane Fleming, here to chat to us all about The Woman in Black. And if the poster gives you enough intrigue, I'm certainly hooked just on that. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you for having us.
It's good to be here.
Brilliant to have you here. And Michael, let's kick it off. What is The Woman in Black all about?
It's a ghost story. It's a novel. It was a novel. It's been turned into a stage production. It's also been made into a film, and there's a sequel, believe it or not, which is kind of out there. Basically, it's like in this production, I'm a man who has witnessed a terrible event, and I have a curse that I carry. And I want to get it off my chest. And I go to see this gentleman, who's an actor, to try and say, can you help me to speak my story? I'm not an actor. I'm just an ordinary man. But you have gifts. And he goes, yes. And we come to a sort of an arrangement, don't we, where he's being me and I'm trying to be the people that I met. And through one thing and another, we intensify the situation and we reenact these terrible, awful, ghostly events in the past. It's quite, what would you say, Zane? Claustrophobic, I suppose, is a way of putting it.
I mean, that's sort of the beautiful thing is it's a play that is quite literally set in a disused theatre. So it's the remnants of previous productions scattered around, and that's what we use to create this world. Yeah. And we're relying very heavily on lights, and mine and Michael's performance of, and as I said, I play a younger version of his character, Arthur Kipps, and and he plays all the other little people that he met along the way. And obviously, as he builds in confidence as he goes along, because as he said, his character's not an actor, and so we sort of build that and we create this horrible event that occurred, a young Arthur Kipps, and that is the story we show to the audience.
Very intense.
It sounds it. And very different to a lot of theatre that's on at the moment, which is really nice. And performing at the Pump House, does that give you a little bit of sort of character to the space as well?
Oh God, I think so. Any theatre that's empty, if you go into a theatre that's just at rest, it has all the ghosts of all the performances there, you know. And I'm a rationalist. I don't believe in ghosts. I'll put that out there. On the other hand, I believe in the power of fear, the power of, you know, the sort of the unknown, because it's the unknown that frightens us mostly.
Yeah.
And, theatres are very spooky places. And this one, I mean, the Trump House is genius for it because it's this fabulous little place, you know. So
And then you come out in the dark at the end and walk back to your car.
then you've got to do the danger walk at the end. Yeah, who knows what's there. But it's also quite psychological. That's the other thing. And I think what we're trying to do with this, because the production can be, as we've discovered, kind of, you know, gothic, can be various things. But I think we're going for something very human, how we affect each other and how that can be psychologically, can manifest in very weird energy and things like that. That'd be a fair comment, eh?
Yeah, I think
like that's going, so that's quite powerful.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like Michael's touched on as well. It's the show has been running for over 30 years on the West End, and obviously that means that it's a brilliant show, it's a well-written play, but it doesn't mean you can't kind of find a new way to approach certain things. And this is my third time doing the show and the third time playing this part. Wow. And even from this, it was our first day of rehearsals today, it was completely different. It was an out-of-world experience of connecting with Michael than it was connecting with my two previous Arthur Kipps. So that's very exciting and fun for me to, you know, revisit this role and have a whole different experience from it. So, from an acting perspective, but also, as you say, it's like Michael said, you know, connecting the audience and really bringing them in. That's the thing. We kind of bring you in and we get a grip on you and we will not let you go. You're in it. The minute we close those doors on you, you're in for that ride.
So who would you be encouraging to come along to this? Is it a certain kind of, is it a horror lover or is it just a theatre lover or is it everybody?
It's interesting. It's all of the above. Horror is interesting, isn't it? Because horror is such a
universal.
Like, this is not a slasher thing. It's nothing like that. It's not. It's deeply creepy.
Yeah.
It's deeply unnerving, and it's thrill. It's a thriller. I guess you'd say it's more like that in a way. It's got that level to it. So you know, looking over your shoulder, you're not sure what's going to happen. I think anyone that wants a theatre lovers for sure, because the script is great. But anyone that wants a real, immediate, visceral, spooky, an unusual night out should come and see it.
Exactly.
Because you're not going to get it anywhere else.
Is there an age rating on it?
There's no age rating, but I would definitely say it wouldn't be one you'd want to bring the little kidlets to if you didn't want to have nightmares and stuff and things. But I think
a 10-year-old would cope.
I think Michael hit on it perfectly. It's that fear of the unknown and it's fear of what's dark and what you can't understand, what you can't see. That's that sort of fear. And one of the big things we're trying to promote with the show, it's in a lot of our promotion, is there has been countless shows that have tried to recreate the effects that The Woman in Black has with on a live audience. It's not like a film where, you know, you're in it, you're there, and people, other shows don't really come close to what The Woman in Black have to offer. So, yeah.
Now, it's on in just a matter of weeks, and you've just started your rehearsals, so it's an intense rehearsal period. And how does that play a part in this sort of creating this story? Is it actually better to have it so intense and just make this your life for the next few weeks?
Well, I'm terrified, if that's what you I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky because I said this is my third time. So even today, once we started rehearsals, I felt the lines just sort of slowly trickling back in, which was a big relief to me. But it's like I said, we're still, it's new blocking, it's new working the space, and it's long days. And as we've done one day, so we're still sort of gauging the space, but we got a lot done. But it's daunting. It is daunting.
I think my approach is always, though, if you can do it totally and full on in less time, then do it. I don't like mucking around. So for me, we did, I guess it's sort of like 10 till 4 roughly. It might be a bit shorter, but we don't stop in that time. We don't really. And that's a lot of work if you're working at a full rate. So we've both, Zane's, I have to learn my lines. They're coming, which is great. Yeah. But, you just got to get in there and, there's no point in mucking around. I love it. I love this. This is what I love most.
Yeah, so, get in there and play.
Yeah. And so really we have only got 3 weeks to rehearse it. But, we'll have the whole play done by the end of the week.
Yeah.
We'll have it all blocked. We will be able to then just grow it and move and shape and change and, bring all our energies to it. And I've already had thoughts after today going, oh, yes, well, that,
It's hard. It's hard. You kind of think back and go, yeah, that was.
Yeah.
Obviously it's the plus of, it's two actors, as I said, it's in a theatre. It's we're using the space to create this thing. So we have the luxury. We don't have to choreograph a dance with 20, 30, 10-year-olds and teach them blocking and you things. It's me and Michael in a theatre space together, and a lot of it, like so much today was just, we moved instinctively and it was like, yeah, that's the right way to do it. So it's great. Yeah.
Brilliant. It's been a strange old couple of years. Things seem to be settling now that we're, we've got our orange light up, although, COVID's still doing its rounds. How are we feeling being sort of back into a bit more of a normal space? Can I dare say that? How are we sort of looking at the roadmap ahead? Is there lots of work and opportunities coming for you?
Well, for me, yes, I'm doing this and then I'm going on tour with a new solo show called The Golden Ass. I booked that last year. So that's like 30 venues, I think, around the country. And that'll be interesting because, if I was to get COVID during any of that, I don't know what the rules will be by then. I've had COVID, so at the moment I'm invincible for another month or so. But, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because we want to, we want people to be close to us as actors in a theatre. I love it, upfront theatre. But of course, and there's always that old adage about performance, a good performance is a wet performance, spraying stuff, everything.
Yeah.
Well, we've got to be a bit careful, haven't we?
Yeah. And then getting the audience reactions when they're all masked up is different too.
Well, exactly. If they indeed do want to mask up, they may not. And that's fine. I think we've got to get on with it, to be honest. Yeah. I just think we just have to get on with it.
I agree. It's almost, with Mask Productions, we've obviously got, me and Keith are really excited to be bringing Tick, Tick, Boom back later in the year, which was, we were obviously doing in early 2020. And then literally we came on the show and Kristen performed and then COVID hit and we were like, oh no. So we're bringing it back. And obviously me and Keith are now in the creative team. And me and Keith have full plans to just keep moving forward. And we just want to bring a new theatre company and something fun to the Auckland scene and give great opportunities. That's our dream and our hope moving forward. So fingers crossed, Women in Black and Tick, Tick. And then in the future, just more great opportunities that we can bring and create. That's what we and me and Keith really want to do.
Good man.
So, Michael, you have such a massive past. Your portfolio is massive. But this might be a hard question to answer. Do you have a favourite show that you've done to date?
Oh, so many, because I've done so many. So, one day I'm thinking, oh, I remember doing Hamlet. That was amazing. And then I go, I remember doing Macbeth. That was pretty amazing. Oh, I remember doing. So, look, I'll tell you one that stands out, a play that absolutely stands out, The Goat by Edward Albee, which I was in with Jennifer at Silo Theatre before it moved from when it was in the basement. That is a play that is it's the modern equivalent of King Lear, not in its contents, not the same story at all. But King Lear is a bigger tragedy than tragedy. It just outdoes it. This play, which is subtitled Towards a New Definition of Tragedy, The Goat, does exactly that in a modern sense. Different story, but it does exactly that. And it is without doubt the most powerful thing I've ever done, to the point where the audience, one night with Jennifer, when she was howling with grief, and I mean howling, the stage direction is she howls three times. And by the time that third howl was getting ready, because they were big, draining, grief-filled wails of grief and sadness, this woman reached out from the audience and put a hand on Jennifer's shoulder to help her.
Wow.
And no one batted an eyelid. No one even, you know, what a moment. What an extreme moment of utter life, the essence of what theatre is, which is in the moment, everybody focused on the same thing and nothing will shift. So that's a memory I have.
Definitely. Emma, there's a question we used to ask our guests in our first few years of Kick Arts, but we've gone a bit quiet this year. But I think we need to ask it of Michael, and that is, if you were to go back and talk to your 16-year-old self, what advice would you give him, knowing what you know now?
Just don't sweat everybody else's problems. It's quite, you know, and as an actor, as a young actor, when I was doing, you know, a technical rehearsal, say, or a dress rehearsal or whatever it was, and things would go wrong, I would be all, oh, what am I going to do? But it would be nothing to do with me. It's just that I was invested. And I realised, and over many things I realised, that, just do your thing, what's in front of you. And things, there are other things, that's the main one. And that's not just a theatre thing. That's possibly a... probably a life thing. Just stay calm, because it's easy to freak out. It's easy. I look at my kids, you know, the young people these days have a lot more to freak out about than we ever did. That's, you know, so it's...
We switched it off at the end of the day. They keep going on devices. The world doesn't end at 3 o'clock.
And look at the world. Look at what's going on. At it. It's like, wow.
Zane, I'd hate you to feel left out of a tricky Kick Arts question, so I'm going to ask you, for Masked Productions, if Creative New Zealand gave you the biggest check they've ever written, what would you use the funding on? What is the one dream for Masked Productions that a nice check from Creative New Zealand would help?
Well, I'll tell you what, me and Keith have already got some pretty big plans in the works. There is a particular show that I think, if anyone knows me and Keith, has definitely been on our radar for quite some time. And I'll tell you, I'll say it in this way. We're not going to wait for Creative New Zealand to give us that price tag. We're going to beg, borrow, steal and make that money to put that show on. I don't want to spill the beans. I've got Keith probably telling me like, no, not yet. But if anyone knows me and Keith and knows the show that we've been dreaming of for years, then they'll know, hopefully that's coming.
Brilliant.
For me? Can I be in it?
Of course, Michael. I mean, yeah, you're just part of the furniture now. You're in everything.
Look, absolute pleasure talking to both of you. We wish you every success with The Woman in Black. It's on at the Pump House Theatre from the 11th to the 19th of June. Head to pumphouse.co.nz and book your tickets, or jump on to Kick Arts. We've got all the details there. Go well with a fabulous season and stay healthy.
Thank you.
Well, the end of another show in Zoomland. We're well and truly kind of in the swing of doing this on Zoom, but we, as we said last week, we can't wait to be back in person.
Absolutely. Yeah, I drive past the new studio so often in my week, and I'm always looking, waiting for the moment the paint thing is peeled off the front with the sign, and we get a sense that we can get in there. But yeah, a little while to go. You were busy this week. You went and caught a dog fight. What was that like?
It was great. I mean, I love the minimalist approach to it. It's one of those shows that does jump from place to place very, very quickly. And I imagine if you did a lot of set changes that it could be very broken up. So the way that they did it was really good. Obviously, too, you know, some fantastic leads in there. The camaraderie and relationship between the three main leads, which was our good friend Josh Downs, Campbell Jamison, and Campbell McKenzie, were absolutely fantastic. They were the three Bs were great. And they had a COVID episode hit as well, where one of their casts couldn't go on. So they had someone step in with an hour's notice that wasn't even part of the show, but had done the New Zealand premiere of it 7 years ago in a totally different role, but was able to go and have a quick hour worth of rehearsals and jump in for the rest of the season. So well done, Bridie Dixon. She is, you know, well known in the Auckland theatre scene. So yeah, she was great as well. But well done, Bravi, for getting it up. I mean, fourth attempt to get it up, and they did it. So
nice.
And a really well-filled audience, which was great to see as well.
That's awesome. Well done, team. If you've got something happening, please write to us, info@kickarts.org.nz. We've got lots of spaces coming up on our shows. We'd love to have you on, promote it, or simply get you up on our bulletin page. It's funny, Emma, you talk about those quick scene changes. I made a rookie mistake in blocking the show Grease. I wanted it to be non-stop. I'm not a great fan of big scene changes. And I was like, this one, we just want a rock concert. It, like, really make it go non-stop. Totally forgot about costumes. At no point did anyone in my team or myself in the direction think about costumes. We have over 400 costumes that get changed over the course of 90 minutes. And until we came into the theatre and tried to run it non-stop, honestly, we had tears of laughter rolling down our face at the realisation that absolutely nobody could possibly get back on. So, yeah, we had to add a few scene change music bits here and there. So, no matter how long you've been doing these things, you still make these mistakes.
Of course you do. Of course you do. Now, I'd just again like to acknowledge our amazing sponsor for May, who's helping us keep Kickarts on air. So Hewitt Mortgages, big shout out to you again. Now, we have a sponsor lined up for June. They have a big show on in June. So, you know, it's a great way, if you've got a show on, to be our sponsor for the month. It's not a whole heap of money, but, you know, you get that constant plug, the social media time, the interview time on our website, and it puts your name out to maybe a slightly different bunch of people. So we've got spaces available to sponsor us for July onwards. So get in touch with us if you would like to help us keep doing what we're doing, helping the arts be a little bit more visible. And I know for so many of our young artists that come on, our singer-songwriters, our young performers, this is the first time they've kind of had publicity and marketing. So, you know, a lot of our past people have said, you know, that what we're doing is important to them. And so we want to keep it going. But, you know, Steve and I personally don't have big pockets.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's lovely people like Te Pāri Hewitt who just recognised actually what an important part this plays for the arts world. Someone who's not necessarily in the arts, but certainly supporting people trying to get their first homes, etc. And there's plenty of young artists that could do with that. So big ups and thanks to Te Pāri and her team. And yeah, you're right, Emma, there's plenty of slots in July and August. We'd love you to promote us.
Now, because it's New Zealand Music Month, it is only fitting that we end tonight's episode with another piece of music from Aotearoa. Our friends Aro have just dropped their latest track, and it comes with a superb video that was put together by another friend of Kickarts, Tom Groot. And you should jump over to Aro, A-R-O, Facebook page and check it out. It really embraces whānau in Aotearoa. So anyway, to end the show tonight, here is Aro with Kia Omo. So thanks for listening to us tonight. Have a great week and
make sure you kick some arts.
Ahakoa o nā whakaro rehi ke ki hōku ake.
Kick some art.